Are you ready for the quantum age?
Humanity's next step in evolution?
Dream Vision 7 Radio Network invites you to the extraordinary platform of evolutionary voices for the quantum age.
Let's explore. Learn more about this upcoming age where we bridge science with spirituality.
Where potentiality meets reality.
Where we take compassion into action.
Our trailblazers and visionaries will ask the whys, the what ifs, while igniting continuous possibility.
Come along with us into an age beyond what we know today, where we can grow together in unity consciousness.
Experience evolutionary voices for the quantum age, Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on DreamVision7Radio.com. Welcome to What's in Your Way is the Way with your host, Mary O'Malley, inviting you to open to the radical notion that in your life, whatever you perceive to be in your way is the way. In other words, your challenges, whether they be relationships, compulsions, finances, or illness, come with gifts embedded in them that can bring healing and allow you to experience the joy of being fully alive. Mary is a counselor, awakening mentor, inspirational speaker, and the author of What's in the Way is the Way, The Gift of Our Compulsions, Belonging to Life, and The Magical Forest of Aliveness. What's in Your Way is the Way with Mary O'Malley is part of Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age. Heard Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Welcome to What's in Your Way is the Way, and I'm your host, Mary O'Malley. And today we are exploring rebuilding trust in the flow of life. A quote by Father Thomas Keating: the chief act of will is not effort, but consent. To try to accomplish things by force of will is to reinforce the false self. But as will goes up the ladder of interior freedom, its activity becomes more and more one of consent to God's coming, to the inflow of grace. Receptivity is not inactivity. It is real activity, but not effort in the ordinary sense of the word. It is simply an attitude of waiting for ultimate mystery. You don't know what that is, but as your faith is purified, you don't want to know. We have been exploring that there is a huge difference between having our attention caught in the world of our minds and having it here for life. We have also explored the four main reasons why we stay so identified with our minds: fear, self-judgment, resistance to the unpleasant, and our need to control. Seeing through these core beliefs of the mind allows us to be less enamored by all of its stories. We can then know more and more of those moments where we are fully here for life, which allows us to open to what Joseph Campbell calls the rapture of being alive. It also allows us to use our mind for the wonderful tool it is, rather than being lost in it most of the time. To be fully engaged with life rather than always thinking about it is what we most deeply long for this moment is our home. But our minds believe that to let go of controlling life is very scary. I have been an awakening mentor for over 38 years, and I have observed that even though most people have a fear of life, when they move through that fear, they find that their life is for them and it is absolutely trustable. The important thing to explore here is that letting go of the control mode and showing up for life instead is not about being helpless. It's about letting go of reacting so we can respond to life from the depth of wisdom that we all carry. We have also been exploring the healing power of using our minds to be curious about what is going on, rather than always trying to control it. We have also explored the deep healing that comes from inclusion, the art of touching what is with our hearts. There are other ways we can use our minds in this shift from trying to create our reality to showing up for reality. The skills we will explore now all come from the knowing that life is for us. Einstein said the most important question we can ask is the universe friendly? His answer was yes. The key word here is universe. Our world is not necessarily a friendly place. Human beings do unspeakable things to one another and to the earth itself. Greed and fear are evident everywhere, and they all come from minds that are disconnected from life. But the universe is ultimately friendly in the sense that it is for life, supporting its unfolding in ways we can't even comprehend, let alone see. In exploring the ultimate friendliness of life, Stephen Levine gave the example of getting down on the ground to watch an ant war. It's violence at work with heads and limbs being torn apart and lives destroyed. And yet, if you stand up and step back, you will see that baby birds are being fed from the body parts and that a deeply buried seed will now be able to germinate because of the dirt that was moved by the ants. He said the longer he is alive, the harder it is for him to say what is grace and what is tragedy. When we stand back far enough, we will see that life is for life in all of its forms, including humans. And it weaves the opposites of dark and light into a dance that is orchestrated for the emergence of conscious life. That means that whatever is happening in our daily lives is for us. There is no accident who is your boss, your mate, the kind of body you have, the financial situation you are in. All are designed to bring up all the old beliefs that you took on that keep you caught in a mind that struggles with life rather than fully living it. In order to be more fully engaged with the adventure of life, we will explore three ways you can use your mind that will take you out of the endless game of struggle and bring your attention back into life. They are living in questions, don't know, and say yes. Living in questions. A quote from Albert Einstein. The important thing is to not stop questioning. Curiosity has its own reason for existing. One cannot help but be in awe when he contemplates the mysteries of eternity, of life, and of the marvelous structure of reality. Most of us have moments, usually when things are going well, when we trust and feel connected to something beyond our own limited awareness. But give us the simplest of challenges in our lives, and rather than going into spaciousness, we often go into contraction, isolation, struggle, and a sense that we have to do it all ourselves. To ask questions of life is to break free from the struggle mode, tapping into the intelligence at the heart of life. It is one of the most skillful ways I know of partnering with that which resides beyond our own limited human comprehension. We did explore earlier the healing power of asking questions in order to make contact with exactly what we are experiencing in this moment, and to use those questions to help heal all of the disowned parts of ourselves. There's another way to ask questions, a way that allows us to access the wisdom that is life and that is always with us. Jeff Ridiger, a psychiatrist from Harvard, went down to visit John of God, the farmer turned healer in Brazil. Jeff went down as a skeptic and then had his world turned upside down. He saw and experienced things that he could not explain from his normal perception. When he was interviewed by Oprah, she asked him how he had changed, and he said, "None of this is what we think it is." He then went on to say, We all matter far more than we typically have a clue about, and love is what is real. I also believe we are not alone in any way like we believe we are. We are more connected than we know. The art of asking what I call open-ended questions is one of the most powerful ways we can discover we are not alone. In order to understand this new way of working with questions, we first need to see how we have been using questions in our life. We have two standard ways of asking questions. The first is from the power over mode. What can I do to get rid of this problem in my life? Or what is wrong here? Or how can I control or fix it? If the intent of our question is only to get rid of what we think is a nuisance, we will not be able to access the creativity of the unknown. The answers will get based only upon what has been done before. While these kind of answers are appropriate at moments in our lives, how do I fix it is an endless game, keeping us stuck in the level of managing our problems. The other way we usually ask questions is from a victim mode. Why do bad things always happen to me? Or why do I always do it wrong? Or why do I have to do this? Or what is wrong with me? Both styles of asking questions are closed-ended loops and do not access the creativity at the heart of the universe. There is another way to ask questions, a way that truly engages us in the process and allows us to receive answers from a place that is way beyond our ordinary minds. It comes from the knowing that true power lies in the questions themselves rather than in getting answers. The most important step in learning how to access the power of open-ended questions is to not look for the answers. This makes the kind of mind we have all lived in for most of our lives a little batty. It is used to trying to figure it all out and believes that this is the only way to solve our problems. The beauty of asking questions without looking for the answers is that it doesn't seduce us into the old, endless game of struggle. The whirling, spinning, grasping mind that is always trying to figure things out puts up a barrier between us and the intelligence that is trying to give us the answer. When we ask a question without looking for an answer, it creates a vacuum that has to be filled. That is a law of physics. The intelligence of the universe rushes into the vacuum of a question, and the answers automatically, in its own time, become apparent. Have you noticed that when you lose something in your house, your mind usually goes into struggle mode, becoming frustrated and upset about not being able to find what you were looking for? But then sometimes we simply wonder, where the lost item is, and we let it go, and a few hours later we remember where we left it. The same is true when we forget the name of something. If we just relax, most of the time it will pop up in our awareness. In this ability to turn our challenges over to an intelligence greater than us, life lives the answer through us. These examples are small challenges, but we can even learn how to do this with the biggest challenges of our lives. The art of trusting that the intelligence of the universe will answer our questions comes to each of us in its own time and in its own way. It helps to notice the evidence that we do live in a sea of intelligence. Everywhere we look, we see its handiwork, whether it is the exquisite balance of the web of life or the amazing healing that happens in a body if we get a paper cut or in a severe automobile accident. The more we pay attention to life, the more we see that this intelligence permeates and penetrates absolutely everything, including our daily lives. It also becomes evident that the resolution to every problem we have ever had or ever will have is nestled in the heart of the challenge, and life waits for the opening of a question. Moments of pure questions signal the universe that we are willing to listen. While we can address our questions to whatever we conceive of as the intelligence which runs this whole show, God, the divine, goddess, higher self, Christ spirit, infinite being, quantum void, or creative intelligence, we don't need to believe that there is an intelligence waiting for the opening of our question. Open-ended questions will work whether we believe in something greater than us or not. I just got off the phone with a client who was very angry. My response only fueled this person's rage, and they hung up in the middle of the conversation. My old mind would have gone into either judgment of the other person or self-judgment, and then would have chewed over the experience like a cow chews her cud. Instead, I closed my eyes, centered on my breath, and asked, "What is the most skillful thing I can do now?" I also asked, "What am I to learn from this experience?" I then went on with my day without the desire to fix anything or figure it out. A few hours later, with the clarity of a crystal ball, I suddenly knew exactly what needed to be said and done. When I shared it with this person, it brought healing and closure to the situation. Answers reveal themselves in the most wondrous ways. I've received them while reading a spy novel when one sentence stands out, almost as if I was reading the whole book just to receive those few words. I've also overheard conversations in the grocery store in which a few words woke me up out of my dream and answered my question. Sometimes while taking a shower or cooking dinner, an answer comes bubbling up from within, stunning me with its simplicity. It can come with blinding clarity, or it can come as an inner knowing that reveals itself gradually, like the sun's warmth dissipating a blanket of fog. The power of asking simple and direct questions of life is absolutely enormous. Jesus referred to it when he said, "Ask, and it shall be given you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. Everyone that asks receives, and he that seeks finds." Your life is waiting for the opening that questions create. You can ask the wisdom at the heart of life for clarity, for guidance, for compassion, for the courage to follow the path of awakening, for understanding about the suffering in your life, and for an awakened heart. The important thing is to ask and know that, in the right time and in the right way, the answers will come forth in your life. There are some standard questions we can use for this new way of working with questions. My favorite question, and the one I feel has made the unfolding of my life immeasurably easier and clearer, is, "What can I say, do, or be in this situation that is for the highest good?" Whether I'm dealing with an angry child, counseling someone in deep grief, or getting ready to speak in front of hundreds of people, this question opens me to an intelligence that is far smarter than I am. Even after all these years of living in questions, I am sometimes still amazed at the depth of clarity that shows up, clarity that is far beyond anything I could have thought up on my own. Another one of my favorite questions is, "How can I see this differently?" When I am caught and struggling in an old pattern, I signal the universe that I am ready and willing to shift my perception when I use this question. I also like, "What am I resisting?" It is evident that whenever I am in my whirling and spinning mind, there is something I don't want to see. By asking to see what it is that I am resisting, my mind settles, willing to connect with the parts of myself that I have formerly resisted. Some other powerful questions are, What is the piece of my own puzzle I'm ready to see? What is my intention here? What is asking to be seen? What is the doorway through this challenge? What do I need to see, love, or accept? What is the shift in perspective that I am ready for? What is the lighter side of this challenge? How can I see this through the eyes of my heart? We can also access the wisdom of life at times we're not in the middle of a challenge. These are what I call life questions, and they are wonderful fertilizer for our journey of moving from unconsciousness to consciousness. Some of my favorites are, how can I serve? Who am I? How can I make a difference today? What is a skillful focus today? What is love? What was I given the gift of life for? Truly powerful questions come from a bigger place, a place that trusts the unfolding and wants to engage with life more than it wants to get rid of problems. You may not even know what questions to ask. Go back to the list of questions and listen carefully to the ones that resonate with you. Be willing to ask at least one question every morning. Put it on the dash of your car, in your wallet, on your phone, as a reminder on your computer at work. If none of the questions resonate, live in the question, what are my questions? Remember that questions create a vacuum that has to be filled. Questions are about curiosity and willingness to receive answers from something bigger and far more intelligent than you are. As you learn to pay attention with questions, you see that everything and everybody and every situation is your teacher. You don't need to figure out what anything means. Understanding will automatically come on its own. It's more the willingness to become completely fascinated by how the journey is showing up. The art of asking questions is exactly that, an art. As we cultivate it, it will slowly ripen in our consciousness. You didn't play Mozart after a few piano lessons. Be willing to simply ask questions without expecting anything in return. Know that you are signaling the process that brought you forth, that you are ready to listen. You are ready to be receptive rather than only relying upon your own intelligence. Don't know. He trudged along, unknowing what he sought, and whistled as he went for want of a thought. John Dryden. As we learn the art of trusting an intelligence that is greater and smarter than us, we will notice that this frustrates our minds. The kind of mind we have lived in most of our life feels that its safety and happiness depends upon getting it all together, being on top of it, being in charge, and always understanding what is going on. At this point in evolution, life is giving us the gift of uncertainty. Experts say one year that salt is bad for us, and we then find on the market shelves of a variety of salt substitutes. The next year, they say the research has now discovered that it isn't as bad as they thought. Political commercials manipulate the facts so much there can be two completely opposing viewpoints coming from the same set of statistics. And terrorists are causing havoc all over the world. This uncertainty is permeating the very core of our collective mind, and it causes a deep sense of unease. We want a place to stand, a place that is solid and unchanging, so we search for the absolute truth. The fact is, truth is relative and includes everything. Our need for control rages when it hears this. It wants absolutes that say this is the right way and that is the wrong way. And yet the transformation that life is about right now is much too great to be contained in the old style of thinking that demands certainty. Truth includes all sides. Do not know, not position, and not seek absolutes is the place in which we can experience the whole. There are two little words that can shift us out of our addiction to be in control. Don't know. These words can engender great confusion and fear, or they can open us back into life. In the struggling mind, we operate from have to know. We have to know what to do, how to do it, when to do it, and where. And we've been caught in this box of control to such a level that we truly believe our minds can understand and control it all. Plato said that what is real can never be comprehended by the thinking mind, and yet we live as if it can. In our society, if we say we don't know, that is tantamount to admitting confusion, stupidity, or resignation. So we keep ourselves away from this sense of failure by staying addicted to the need to know. This cuts us off from so much. To live in the known is to live in the old and the limited. To live in the unknown opens us to what is new, magical, mysterious, and adventuresome. I saw this clearly at a long meditation retreat I attended. We were relieved of the normal demands of our daily life. We didn't have to cook, talk, do errands, run a business, or be social. And yet, as my awareness sharpened and centered, I could see that most of what my mind was doing throughout the day was planning what was going to happen next and, at the same time, trying to figure it all out. I was living in a constant circle of busyness inside of my head. At moments, I would be present, resting in my breath and connecting with the newness of life. And then the clouds of confusion would arise. My mind would struggle with the confusion, trying to figure out what was happening so it would all go away. At times, I could also watch my mind planning the whole day. Oh, if I do this now, then that will come next, and then I will be able to do that, and then, and then, and then. If something caught my eye, a unique cactus, or a hummingbird dancing its beauty, my mind would say, I can't stop and explore this. I have to, and fill in the blank. Upon seeing this relentless demand to have it all ordered, orchestrated, figured out, and timed, I began to play with don't know, saying to myself, I don't know what's going to happen next, and I don't need to know. As I did this, bubbles of joy would arise from the core of my being. I don't have to figure it all out, my awareness would say. My mind would calm down, and the living experience of life, formerly blocked by the struggle to control and understand, became evident. I also began to say to my planning mind, we don't need to know what's going to happen. For just these few days, let life unfold and see what appears. I was willing, at least for moments, to let go to something bigger than my own ideas about life, and those moments would bring great connection with the perfection of it all and a deep trust in the unfolding. At other moments, not figuring it all out would bring up waves of terror, and I would need to go back to allowing my mind to be in charge. Slowly, as I worked with this over a number of days, I began to move into more of what I call body time. We usually live in thought time, planning for the future and trying to understand the past. To live in body time asks us to be present now and to allow whatever understanding and planning that is needed to arise out of direct connection with the living moment. Body time moves us into the place of being truly connected with our own lives. Don't know is not about getting rid of planning. Planning is a useful tool for maneuvering through our lives. We do need to make lists, keep schedules, and figure out directions. But rather than using the ability to plan and orchestrate our lives, we have become consumed by it. When someone is speaking, we're usually focusing on what we're going to say in response rather than really listening. When someone requests a moment of our time, we often can't give it fully because we feel caught in what we've already planned. We don't stop for the beauty of a sunset or a child's eyes because we are already on to the next thing in our schedule. The biggest downside of the planning mind is that it keeps us lost in the illusion that we have to do it all. In order to use the planning mind effectively, we need to become aware of when it is appropriate and when it is not. If we're getting tight, it's a pretty good sign that we are again identified with the need to control. We also need understanding. We may fear something, a person's behavior, a feeling in our bodies, but as soon as it is explained to us, oh, it's just a gas pain and not trouble with my heart, we can soften into it. Our shoulders drop, the furrow in our brow eases, but this will only take us so far. When we come to the edge of our limited understanding, the urge to know can flip us into struggle, heightening our fear and birthing more self-judgment and confusion. So much in life cannot be understood, for it is an unfathomable mystery, but we can open to it, and in that opening is the wisdom and support we long for. To stay constantly in the mindset of having to know and plan is to miss one of the true joys of life, the freedom and creativity that come from opening to the process and letting something bigger than our ordinary minds be in charge. When we come to the edge of our understanding and our best laid plans dissolve in front of our own eyes, and when our minds flail, whirl, and spin, this is the time to cultivate don't know. Whenever we are at this edge, saying I don't know can move us beyond our attempts to control, bringing forth waves of joy and relief. Learning the art of don't know takes time. But as we are truly willing to live on this edge, something real, authentic, alive, and so very healing can show up. True knowing is something that is experienced, not figured out. To cultivate don't know, you can add to your daily practice a wonderful Zen meditation. So I invite you to close your eyes. Deepen your breath. And then on your in-breath, say to yourself, clear mind, clear mind, clear mind. And on your out-breath, chant in one long breath, don't know. Clear mind, clear mind, clear mind on your in-breath. And don't know on your out-breath. Be willing to play with this. As you meet different choices, challenges, and uncertainties in your life, say, don't know, don't need to know, don't have to know, don't got to know. Watch the moments that this brings up fear, and watch the moments when it opens you to the spaciousness where creativity lives. Say yes. To be interested in the changing seasons is a happier state of mind than to be hopelessly in love with spring. George Santayana. Wherever we look, we see that life consists of opposites: day, night, winter, summer, male, female, expansion, contraction. Accepting that both poles of existence will continue to show up in our lives, joy, sorrow, easy, difficult, pleasant, unpleasant, allows us to remain at the center of the opposites. It moves us out of the belief that light is good and shadow is bad. The problems of our lives are here to awaken us, says your awareness, here to break the armoring around your heart and to move you out of the delusion that you are separated, isolated, and alone. Saying yes to whatever is appearing in your life takes you out of struggle mode and invites you to listen, to really listen to life, especially to that which we formerly resisted, hated, and feared. The old paradigm of fighting what we don't like says that we have finally gotten it all together when our lives are easy and we are happy, but when we've done it wrong, they are turbulent, chaotic, and scary. Saying yes allows us to see that our lives will always dance between these two poles, and that we miss an opportunity for deep understanding and an abiding sense of peace when we try to do away the difficult and get to the light without listening. Rather than always contracting around the difficult, unsettling, and confusing parts of our lives, saying yes teaches us to stay open, curious, alert, and receptive to what is. Have you ever watched a baby for a while? It's like watching the weather dance across the face of the earth. Anger comes, anger goes. Laughter comes, laughter goes. Babies don't get stuck in any one state. As we become older and are conditioned to fear and hate that which is deemed inappropriate, incorrect, wrong, or bad, our times of ease become shorter and shorter as more of our energy is spent in fixing, resisting, self-hatred, and fear. The power of saying yes, along with the inefficiency of struggling with what is, has been clearly shown through biofeedback. In Elmer Green's pioneering work with biofeedback, he built a device that would allow people to receive immediate information about the temperature in their fingers. When they use conscious willpower to warm their hands, usually the opposite occurred. When they are invited to visualize the change and then simply let it happen, many experience their hands warming over and over again. Allowing things to happen brings far more powerful results, not only in warm fingers, but also in life itself. The most profound intelligence of life is not the ordinary thinking mind. As the poet David White says, what we can plan is too small for us to live. Beneath the realm of our everyday consciousness lies a sea of creativity that is full of ideas, solutions, and evolutionary shifts that are waiting to be recognized. Not fighting with what is can drop us into those regions of vast, untapped potential. We find a pool of creativity that is waiting the spaciousness of saying yes, so that it can communicate with our ordinary minds. Tony Schwartz, in his book What Really Matters, speaks about going to a workshop on biofeedback that clearly showed him the depth in which efforting and grasping keeps us isolated and away from peace, creativity, and innovation. The intention of this particular weekend was to access the alpha brain state, the more focused and peaceful brain waves that lie just beneath our everyday minds. He actually felt a bit cocky as he began. Having meditated every day for the previous 2 years, he felt, oh, he could easily do this. Instead, he found that his most reliable meditation techniques only increased his alpha by a modest amount, and frustration set in. Before long, he found himself stuck, unable to increase alpha no matter what he tried. A sense of failure took over. This only made him feel more frustrated and more critical. In describing his experience, he said the issue was control. In the face of feelings of helplessness and inadequacy, I fought harder to succeed at relaxing. But the harder I tried, the tenser and more exasperated I became, and the more my alpha dropped. It was a vicious cycle, and the only plausible way out was to let go of my need to control the outcome. The next day, mired in the emotion of hopelessness, he became aware that he was in familiar territory, caught in his negative internal dialogue. As a wave of sadness washed over him, his alpha levels immediately increased. Aha, said his mind, all I have to do is feel rather than think, and I'll create more alpha. But as soon as he consciously tried to create feelings, his scores plummeted once again. He finally realized that actively seeking anything required analyzing, labeling, rating, and conceptualizing, all wonderful skills of our ordinary minds that allow us to maneuver through daily life, but the skills that keep us separate from the sea of creativity. He realized that dropping out of the often chaotic ordinary mind could not be done through the skills of this mind, trying, efforting, figuring out. It only could be done when he was able to authentically be with whatever was happening at any given moment, even if what was happening was chaos itself. In that willingness to be authentically present, saying yes to whatever was here, and then allowing the alpha to come rather than trying to capture it, his ordinary mind calmed down, and the peace and creativity of alpha was there. This is one of the best descriptions I've ever heard of the power of not fighting with what is. When Tony was able to be with exactly what was happening in that moment, not trying to get anywhere or be anything, he immediately tapped into the more peaceful and creative alpha state. The more we say yes, the quicker whatever we are resisting can move right on through. The Buddha once told a story about Sakka, the ruler of the Devas, that speaks to this. When Sakka was out visiting the far reaches of his land, a sullen, pot-bellied dwarf came to visit the castle. Finding the king absent, he went up and sat on the throne. This was an act of supreme sacrilege. Sakka's followers tried to bully, shame, taunt and scare the dwarf away, but much to their dismay, he grew bigger and stronger in exact proportion to the resistance to his presence. At length, the king was called back from his journey in order to get rid of this unwanted guest. Upon entering the throne room, instead of challenging the unwelcome guest, he draped his own robe over the dwarf's shoulders and knelt in respect before him. With every act of welcoming, appreciation, and recognition, the dwarf became smaller and smaller until he finally vanished. The king understood that resistance feeds the part of us that both internally and externally we hate and fear. It is our aversion and judgment that gives power to what we are resisting, and it is in saying yes that they lose their power over us. One of the most powerful ways to bring yes into our lives is with thoughts and feelings that move through us all day long. We are all a mix of dark and light. It is not only the benevolent, powerful, clear, and strong parts of us that are necessary. Our fears, shadows, hatreds, confusions, and even our sore knees are all essential pieces of the community that we are. As we include all the parts of our being without shame or blame, we become a more integrated human being. The willing to say yes to all the parts of ourselves makes space for ideas and actions that aren't available when we separate ourselves into good and bad parts. Upon hearing about not resisting what we are experiencing, our initial response is oftentimes this horror. Oh my God, if I allow this to be here, it will take over, says our minds. The exact opposite is true. For most of my pre-awakening life, I was a compulsive eater. In 1 year alone, I gained 97 pounds. Never in all those years did I stop trying to fight and control this deep hunger that would roar through my best intentions like a wildfire on a windy day. Then I learned the art of saying yes. I would say to that hunger, I am choosing to move beyond hating and fearing you. You are part of me. You have a voice in the community of my being. I want to hear what you have to say. I want to know you. I want to understand what your contribution is to my awakening. At first, my eater grabbed its freedom and ran with it. It felt like it had been let out of prison and wanted to eat everything that it could get its hands on. But when this part of me was met with true inclusion, it had nothing to fight against. And I found myself beginning to celebrate the joy of zucchini. It actually looked delicious to me, rather than always being obsessed by chocolate. The more I listened, the more I began to appreciate this overeater that I had formerly thought of as a monster. I could see how it was created in my childhood out of a need for survival. I was finally able to say thank you for taking care of me my whole life. You were born out of a desire for safety and connection. The more I showed it respect and acceptance, the less it felt a need to push. The more I made space for the uncontrollable hunger, the more it revealed the deep pain out of which it arose. And slowly and surely, my response to these urges moved from control, fear, and hatred into deep compassion, respect, and inclusion. And as I did, the urges calmed down. We can't fake this. The mind, once it sees the magic of making space for what we formerly resisted, will try to use this in hopes it will make the unpleasant go away. It won't work. Just as we know deep in our guts when someone isn't quite being honest with us, our formerly hated and feared parts have highly tuned radar systems for what is a true yes and what is not. True welcoming says it's okay for whatever is here to be here. It is willing to stand with our pain, our fear, our rage, because it knows that they are part of the community of our being. Saying yes is not about indulging in unhealthy feelings, nor it is about justifying unhealthy actions. It's about creating enough space around our feelings so that we can see them, understand them, learn how to work with them rather than being against them. It is not about standing in front of tidal waves of emotion and trying to listen. There is a time for saying yes, and there's a time for boundaries. In my own life, as I found a greater sense of welcoming, not only are my boundaries much clearer, but they are also more easily and compassionately declared. The art of saying yes not only works inside of us, it works with the people and experiences of our lives. Arnie Mandel, the author of The Shaman's Body, tells a welcoming story from a conference he led in Russia on conflict resolution. Members of the parliament and delegations from groups in conflict from the various regions of the ex-Soviet Republic were there. As they gathered together, it was noted that this was one of the first times in history that these groups had ever agreed to be even in the same room. One after another, they spoke of the suffering of their people, describing war, poverty, and ongoing racial prejudice. They spoke of terrorists invading their localities and of the effects of the imperialist policies of the Soviet leaders. Arnie, realizing that the victim viewpoint was present, but neither the imperialists nor the terrorists had a voice in the room, he invited people to act out the different roles. They got up and stood in places set aside for the three divisions, the imperialist, the terrorists, and the victimized community. The tension was thick in the room when suddenly everything exploded into roars of laughter. The imperialists were demanding that everyone submit to their domination, and the terrorists screamed back, "To hell with you." In that moment, when the imperialists and the terrorists, those who were formerly hated and feared, were included, the group moved beyond the victim stance and became an alive connection functioning whole. Arnie said they were then able to cry and laugh about our world, witnessing together humanity's tendency to dominate, to suffer, and to rebel. Nothing was solved immediately, but something shifted. From that time and in that place, they became bigger than war, both the internal war of I hate me and the external war of I hate you. Whether it's inside of us or in our world, the most powerful gift of saying yes to life is that it opens up the field of our being. As we practice the fluidity of welcoming, the energy we formerly use for struggle is available for our natural state of radiance and reverence, a glowing, alive, grateful, and present state of being. It is pure joy to watch the transformation point when one shifts from resistance to welcoming. Life wants to fill us with its creativity. Notice that if we denude a hillside into that void, we'll rush life. First will come smaller plants, and if left for a long enough time, it will progress through stages until it grows into a thriving forest. The same is true of individual human beings and the earth community as a whole. There are worlds of creativity. They're waiting to be expressed through us. It's time to become fertile fields of welcoming so the seeds of awakening can bloom. So be willing to live in open-ended questions. Cultivate the art of not knowing and the transformation of saying yes to life, and watch your life open up. Thank you for listening. Namaste.
Calling all authors. Have you been considering an audiobook? Well, look no further. Come take advantage of Dream Vision 7 Radio Network's unique in-house audiobook production, which includes benefits and bonuses from our radio station. Let our knowledgeable staff guide you to create the audiobook you've always dreamed of without breaking the bank. Check out our full one-stop service from A to Z, including the ACX process. Schedule a free consultation by calling 508-226-1723. That's 508-226-1723. Or go to DreamVision7Radio.com.
Thank you for listening to this edition of What's in Your Way is the Way with your host, Mary O'Malley. You can access Mary's offerings on her websites, MaryO'Malley.com and WhatsInTheWayIsTheWay.com. Join Mary next time to experience the peace and joy that is always with you on Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age. Heard Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.